Okay, well, let's kick this off. So welcome to Office Hours for Architects Marketing Academy. Today is December 1st, 2015. Hard to believe. And we'll be taking your questions that you've sent in ahead of time, as well as those that you type into the chat or questions box. So let's kick this off. I see, Enoch, you've got a question on your screen from Harlot Njenga.
I do. Yep. I'd be happy to handle this one. So question is, we'll see who wants to handle it. Greetings, question on social media. I know that we are yet to cover that in the program. Would like some guidance on how I can use, and especially on the details we should focus on in terms of updating our social media platforms. Any volunteers who want to take this one?
Not me.
Richard.
I think, Enoch, you've written the book on social media for architects, so go ahead and take it away.
Absolutely. Sure. Quick answer, Harliet, is that you want to find out where your influencers are hanging out. So depending on what, social media is just a tool. It's not something that's going to get you automated leads. It's not a silver bullet cure. What it can do, though, sometimes is get you around gatekeepers. So a lot of times, if you want to reach out to someone, it's kind of good if you're establishing that cold relationship to hit them a couple different avenues. You might try to call them, you might send them a letter, you might try to connect with them on Twitter, connect with them on LinkedIn. So it's sort of, I view it as sort of a one prong of a many pronged approach. And in terms of where should we focus in updating our social media platforms, if your main focus right now, you got to decide, what's my main focus? Do I want brand exposure, or do I want to get leads in the door right now, get work in the door? If your focus is getting work in the door, you need to be more direct. Don't worry about updating your social media platforms. Go out there, make your list of people who you want to connect with because they're good referral partners, and then put into place a plan to connect with them. It's going to vary person to person. So that's my 30-second response there. It's all about connecting with the people. That's social media is nice because sometimes, like I said, you can get around gatekeepers that otherwise might be hard to get around. But it really starts with the people who you're targeting. So that's the first thing I would say is make sure you have that list of decision makers or referral partners that you're trying to build those relationships with. Otherwise, all that social media effort's just going to be time spent in stuff that's non-productive and not going to produce a return on investment.
I think I'll just expand a
What
tiny
do you guys
bit,
think?
and that is to say that social media can support your other efforts, and you can leverage whatever you're doing elsewhere on social media. So, if, for example, you do have a new article or blog post or Monkey's Fist or newsletter, then you can, tweet it out. You can, if you want to have a Facebook presence, you can. It's not likely that it's going to bring in direct business, but some people do like that. You have to sort of think about where people are. In other words, for home design and for residential, Facebook may be a way to reach them. For B2B, institutional, organizational, government work, probably not. But to whatever extent you can add on that extra 5% of effort and just be visible wherever people are, that's good, but it shouldn't be your primary focus. Okay.
Thanks, Harley, for the question. So we're going to jump over here to a question about the Dirty 30 campaign from Samuel Corchado from Puerto Rico. That's a good question here. So question is, I'm going to turn this one over to Richard. He says, I'm still behind on reaching my Dirty 30. I've identified them, although I think some of them might not produce anything, which I understand is part of the process. How do I approach them, especially if I don't know them? Do I send a letter, an email, a regular mail introducing myself? Recognize them as people of influence in their market and why I'm contacting them. Do I include a printed version of the Monkey's Fist for their particular area of influence? Or we just refer to our website about our materials? Do I include a printed teaser into the Monkey's Fist? Do we just start by sending them our newsletter without any previous introduction? Samuel says, I'm lost. I mean, paralyzed. So he's wondering how to break the ice. How do I break the ice? Is there a best proven strategy?
Yep. Well, I can give you one good way. But really, okay, so let's just go back to basics. The dirty 30 are people who could or should be referring people to you. So that's who should be on your list of dirty 30. Then we need to make contact. And you can just start sending them a newsletter. You could just do that. And it'd be better not sending them a newsletter, okay? So even if you didn't know them. But ideally, what I'd like to see you do is contact them and set up a meeting and just go and have a coffee with them. Now, how can you get a meeting and a coffee with them if you don't know them? If you do know them, you should still go and meet with them, have a coffee, tell them what you're up to, tell them the type of clients you're looking for. But here's the key thing. What you might do is you might do a little bit of research on them first, and you might then contact them. There's two approaches. I'll give you the easy approach. One approach would be to contact them and say, listen, I write a newsletter, I write an article for these type of people, and I'm looking for someone to interview who knows about this topic, you know, and work out what your topic is, and then go and interview them. Okay, so that's one way of doing it. Just go and interview them for the topic that they know something about that is of value to your readers, and that's a good way to get in the door and get to know people. Now, I know people have done that, and they've gone and interviewed about 30 of their key, you know, influencers, advisors, people who could refer in their industry, and they've picked up about 12 different projects from various, you know, through these, because they've got to know them, they've interviewed them, got to know the person, and it's led to other things. So that's one way of doing it, and you can reach almost anyone. In New Zealand, you know, I often tell people, but I cold called our Prime Minister. And because I was asked to interview him, then me and my friend got to go out and we interviewed him. They thought we were legitimate journalists. Well, we weren't. We were writing an article, and we were doing interviews. But anyway, the bottom line is, if I can reach the Prime Minister of my country, you can surely reach some of the influencers in your market and interview them and actually write an article and put it in a newsletter. Most people are really flattered to be in. So, okay, let's say you don't want to do that or you want a different method. The other thing to do is just consider, you know, who these people are. Do a wee bit of little bit of research on them. And now, I'm assuming you don't know them. If you know them, just go and see them. But if you don't know them, do a little bit of research on them and work out how you can help them. Okay, so work out what can you do for them and or their clients, right? So once you've worked out what you can do for them, I mean, we all know what they can do for you, or that's what we're assuming. And then just ring them up and say, hey, listen, I think I might be able to help you. Can we have a chat sometime? And just go and meet them and just talk about how you might be able to help each other. So how could you help them? Depends on who they are. You might be able to provide some information for their clients, which they find helpful. You might be able to provide information for them. You might be able to cross-refer. You refer to them, they might be able to refer to you. You know, a lot of people would be very interested in that. Don't forget, a lot of the people on your Dirty 30 list are also in business, and they're also constantly looking for clients. And, you know, if someone came up and said, hey, I'm getting a lot of questions around this area, I see you do this type of work, can you handle more business? You know, could you handle more clients? Because chances are, a lot of the people on your Dirty 30, you could refer people to. So just say, well, I'd like to meet you. I don't refer to anyone I haven't met, but maybe if we meet, we get to know each other, then I might be able to send some people your way, which is true. So, you know, so step one, if you don't know them, work out how you could possibly help them. Maybe you could interview them. Maybe you could send people their way. Maybe you could provide information or resources for them. Or their clients. Those are some of the doorways in as reasons to meet up with them. And then genuinely go to the meeting and work out ways how you can help each other. You know, don't just go thinking, oh, it's all take, take, take. I know you won't do that, but don't go thinking that everybody else is thinking that's what you're doing. You know, genuinely go with an open mind on, you know, you're looking for a win-win situation, how you can help them, they can help you. And That's how you do business. That's how they do business at the, you know, the CEO boardroom level. They will network. they'll work out how they can help each other or do deals or something like that. It's kind of normal. But when we're down at the low levels, just a small one-man band, one-woman band type operation, we often think, oh, no, that's dirty, and you know, it's not good. No, it's how it's done. It's how it's done. You go out and you network, and you and I think if you go with the view of how you can help them first, then the door will always be open. How's that?
That's good. I want to just add one thing that I think String shared on occasion, which is he calls the stealth appointment strategy, and it's related to what you were saying, Richard, of interviewing and also how can I help you approach. Part of it is saying, can I pick your brain? Can I get a few minutes of your time to understand your needs better? Because, you know, let's say he was a landscape architect working with architects. So, you know, what are the issues that you have with landscape architects? I want to understand that better because, you know, I want to make sure I'm serving my architects better. And, you know, I've just come to town or I'm just expanding my business. I'm, you know, having some reason why right now this is a pressing issue. And he would get some of the, you know, the issues like, ask for some designs to be done and it takes too long. You know, we need it in a certain time frame, or people just aren't reliable in delivering. And so by sort of essentially being an ear to them, he then knows what to communicate back to other architects. And of course, just that natural inclination, they've already sort of shared some information. There is a connection now. And in fact, he got significant amount of business from that. I think he booked up his practice in about, you know, 3 months of these meetings that the intention was to generate business, but the overt request was, can we meet? I'd like to understand better, you know, what you need as an architect. So.
Yep. I'm going to give you just one little kind of mind trick to help you do this, because this is, I can vouch for the strategy that Richard's talking about here. I mean, I used it when I first started my practice, and I was able to meet with the CEOs and facility managers of local hospitals. What was really cool about that, because I went in as someone who was going to interview them or talk to them instead of someone trying to pitch my services, they kind of opened up to me in a way that they wouldn't have otherwise. For instance, one of them actually even started telling me about his unfavorable experience with my employer. He basically said, "Man, I'll never do what, you know." He's all, "You can come to my office, we can talk, but not if it's going to be about getting your firm more work." And this is when I was still with my previous firm, because he said I had a bad experience with him. And so when we got together and chatted, you know, he opened up to me about that, and it just really gives you that in that you might not otherwise have. So that is also my go-to strategy when I want to meet people. Just a personal experience I've had, you know, I think it was about a month ago or a month or two ago, I interviewed Art Gensler, who's the founder of Gensler, right? If I would have called him up and said, "Hey, I'm Enoch Sears, I'm an architect from California, I want to talk to you," you know, I probably would have gotten transferred to the local Gensler office. But because I said, "Hey, I'm an interviewer, I have a podcast, Business of Architecture," you know, he took time out of his schedule when he was in Denver to meet with me in the Gensler office, and took time out of his company meeting. It was funny. We went over a little bit, and his employees were like peering around the corner wondering when he was going to come talk to them. The point is that gave me an in just with taking that different approach. So back to the mindset. If you do the strategy, I encourage you to leave your portfolio at home. It might be counterintuitive, but it will help you play the part and get in the mental state that you're not there to show them what you're all about. You're there to figure out what they need, get to know them, and see how you can help them. So that's just sort of a little trick that I used that helped me get out of that mode of, this is who I am and this is what I can offer. I just, you know what, leave the portfolio home. And if they ask for it, you know what, it actually looks good when you can say, you know what, I don't even have it. You know, I'll have to email it to you or something. You know, then you can continue the conversation. I'm going to move on here to the next question. Thank you for that. You know, Samuel, you also did send in your letter. I want to really quickly touch on that just because it was a good letter. And I think it's here, right here. Okay. It is in Spanish, so I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this. But what I will say, Samuel, is that at the beginning of his letter here, he starts out by talking about the challenges that credit unions are having. This is a lot better than the letter you showed us last time, Samuel, in terms of, you know, making your communication all about the people who you're writing to. So good work. There's quite a bit of flattery right here in this first paragraph. Any flattery you can lay on, as long as it doesn't come on too thick, is going to be very good. Stroking the ego will always be good. So good start. Send this to them. Make the call to action stronger. Down here on the bottom, you kind of say, hey, by the way, you know, you can visit our website if you want more information. Make that call to action stronger. Give them a specific action step to do. Say, by the way, we've prepared this guide. Go download it. And then you can send them two follow-up letters that basically kind of say the same thing. Hey, I noticed you didn't download it, or, you know, follow up with them and keep that open. So there's your feedback on that. Good start, Samuel. Follow it up with a phone call. After you send this letter out, I think this is a good letter, follow it up, you know, maybe a few days after you know it arrives at the office. Tell the gatekeeper, I'm calling about the letter that I wrote, and a lot of times they'll put you through. Marketing for the poorly connected. Cameron says, I've been busy with work and haven't been able to spend a lot of time with AM tasks. Now, I have my Dirty 30 list. It's not quite 30. I'm not sure I have enough people. I don't think I have that many contacts so I could contact about my services. I know more is probably better, but what does one who is naturally introverted do? I don't know a bunch of realtors, builders, movers, and shakers. Any advice? Should I send newsletters to people I don't know? Mr. Petrie, and then Eric, I'll let you, Eric. Mr. Petrie, what do you say to Cam here?
Yeah, so the question was, do I send newsletters to people I don't know? And what was the first part?
You know, well, the cold contacts. How do I contact someone who I don't have a relationship with before?
And I think it's not just how to, because we've already done that. It's who to. In other words, how to think about the ones to contact.
Sure. Okay. So you know, just very briefly, how to contact them depends on who they are. I'd always start with, you know, and I know we're reiterating, but I'd always start with thinking, okay, if I was contacting them, how can I help them? I don't want to call up from a sales point of view, but how can I go and help them? Or, you know, so just doing some research, I'm writing an article, or I'm new, just trying to understand the local situation. In terms of who to contact, I've written down some here. The best ones, there's two obvious candidates for the best ones that already generate the most referrals from what I can see. One is past clients. But ironically, they're not the best one. The best one seems to be builders, and particularly if you're residential, but probably even commercial. So those are two categories of people you definitely need to have on your list of Dirty 30, builders and past clients. The other one could be unconverted clients. There's no reason why you can't send a newsletter to unconverted clients or unconverted prospects, deals who didn't go ahead. Because, one, just because it didn't go ahead a year ago doesn't mean it can't go ahead now. And two, they also probably know people. So, sometimes they're just as good as clients. Not they aren't as good, but they're still worth considering. Another one is, who are the advisors to the clients I'm trying to reach? Who are the people who advise them and consult with them? So obviously those people. It depends on what you're doing. Thought leaders is a good one. Some of the guys, I think, is it Peter Tui? He sends information to journalists in his local area, and they often, because they receive his newsletter, they often ask him for advice and to write articles and to be in articles and things like that. So thought leaders in your market is a good one to have on your list. And some people say real estate agents. I haven't heard of, you know, real estate agents being great generally, but it's worth having on your list. Maybe you do know someone who would be suitable. Those are the main ones I can think of off the top of my head. Eric, what about you?
Well, I would just expand a little bit on the thought leader idea and the journalist. So in terms of passive house, I'm sure that clients look to build energy efficient green buildings to a local firm. So you're obviously geographically focused. I mean, I imagine that's likely. But still, the magazines or other publications or online portals that focus on this topic, I'm sure you're familiar with some, and if you did a little research, you could probably find others. They're always looking for things to talk about, projects to share, ideas, current, trends. So possibly reaching out to them. The point blank thing is, I understand that you have this portal and you write articles about passive house design. I've done a number of them. Would you be interested in seeing some of my work? That would be a very direct pitch. I have some work that you might find interesting to profile, but you could also do it in reverse, sort of. What are the information or things that you're seeking? Perhaps I can help you with this. Maybe even writing something for their publication or their portal. Just that exchange of sort of how can I help you with your job, with your mission of sharing passive house and energy efficient design. So ultimately, because they're thought leaders, because it could allow you to be published, because it could sort of set you up for that type of public relations coup. Think about what Richard did with Mona in New Zealand, where there was a specialty, very clear that she chose the character homes. You've got a specialty in terms of passive house, but maybe there's something in the local paper as well in terms of there might be some opportunity to be profiled as the passive house specialist in your region. Now, that might be just a one-off thing, but you could sort of start that process of, if there is an architecture column or some other journalist in your local area, how can you put them on your Dirty 30 list?
Thank you, gents. Anyone have any suggestions about how to overcome or suggestions for people who feel they're introverted?
Introverted. Yes. It's a very common problem with people who are technical experts. They love getting down into the nitty-gritty detail. And the problem is, if you're an introvert and you're running a business, you've got a slight problem, as you well know. So all those who are introverts realize they have a slight problem. You either have to hire someone or you actually just have to get out there and do it. So, look, at the end of the day, I just wrote an article this morning, but referrals and word of mouth is typically going to be your number one source of leads, and you can supplement it with a bit of marketing. But referrals and word of mouth relies on the fact that you are a little bit sociable, have a good bedside manner, and are known to a reasonable amount of the right people. So even introverts are often interesting people. So you just have to get out there and connect with other people. You have to get out of your grass hut out in the middle of nowhere and just go out and connect with people. Yeah, it's about approaching people. But I tell you what, the big fear often introverts have is they don't want to be seen as a salesperson, okay? Well, the answer to that is, well, don't be a salesperson. Well, as we said earlier, selling is nothing more than finding out what people want and helping them, right? So don't think about things like, I need to go out and sell my services. Think about who are the people who need help and how can I help them? And if it comes down to, you're looking for a Dirty 30, who are the people out there who have access to a lot of the people I'm trying to reach and how can I help those 30? How can I help them in some way? It might be small. They're all struggling just like we are. Some of them are introverts, So all of us are striving for something different. If you can take the attitude that I want to help people, I want to provide educate. That's why this whole thing around that we talked about of the educating the market is a good one, because we're not really so into selling you. We're into making, you know, making sure that you go out and educate people. Well, all you're really marketing is your knowledge and your ability to help people. And you're giving some of that knowledge away. You're giving a small piece of that away. So you don't have to worry about being salesy, because this our whole approach we talk about with the monkey's fist is really you're marketing information which should help the type of people you're trying to reach. And that's it. Your job is to help as many people who have those issues and problems and looking for answers. Your job is to help as many of those as you can. And by reaching out to the Dirty 30 and people like that, you're just trying to extend your reach so that you can help more people. And so they can help more people, you know. So pick good questions, pick good problems, provide some answers to those, and share those answers with people who a lot of them will be in your Dirty 30. It's not a big deal. You don't have to be selling. You just have to help people first. They'll naturally come to you if they like your educational material and your answers.
So
thanks, Richard. Anything to add to that, Eric?
Yeah, well, it seems like this has touched a nerve for a few of you because we've gotten some nice comments. Michelle Slinger says, attend Chamber of Commerce events with a buddy if you're shy. Great idea. And Ruman says, for introverts, bring a friend that makes you feel confident. Which I think, yeah, definitely that can help when you attend an event. Stephen Patterson writes, shared a link, which you should have in your chat because I reply back, for 16 super successful introverts, and it's a Huffington Post article. So if you're just wondering if it's possible to, you know, get beyond, let's say, your limitations that you feel, perhaps that article may be an inspiration. Pamela Chikala says, would it be a good idea to contact people that did not? Okay, this is another question. Good one. We'll look at that in a moment. But along the lines of this introvert thing, Samuel Corchado writes, there's a site, communicationfornerds.com, that can help somehow. So you're not alone, obviously, in terms of feeling like you're intelligent, but you're just not, you know, super comfortable with getting out there. So definitely.
Can I just make a comment here? So this is really interesting. So when you find out what your market, you know, if there's a specific niche problem that your market has, you then create a monkey's fist for it. So as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, well, what would be a good monkey's fist for us? Well, maybe if we wrote an article on you know, how to generate leads for introverted architects, that would probably really resonate with a lot of people. And then we document the minds, yeah, whatever we say. But this is a good example, not a, you know, of actually finding out what your market's problems are and creating a specific example. So I reckon that would be quite a good monkey's fist, you know. How to generate leads and clients when you're an introverted architect. Because it's obviously, you know, and it's not just architects, it's all the technical professions, you know, engineers are the same. They rather get there with their calculator and pens and a bit of paper and, you know, map things out. They don't really want to be out cold calling. Who does, you know? So you know, that's obviously an issue. That's you know, I've spotted that as a potential monkey's fist or an article that we can write to help people. And we offer it out there and say, hey, if anyone's an introverted architect and you're struggling with marketing, read this because I think I've got a thing that can help you. We're going to attract leads with that. So that's the type of thinking you should be taking with your market, is say, okay, well, what are some of the pain points? What are some of the concerns? And maybe I can write a short little piece to help people out. Because that's what your job is to find out what people want and help them.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. So, thanks, Richard. Thanks, Eric.
I'm going to read one more comment to finish this up, and then we have a couple of questions that were added to our queue, you know, some good ones to discuss. I know that we have some others sent in ahead of time, but this one is from Pamela Chikala saying, I'm introverted and my husband is the opposite extreme, so I try to take on some of his traits when I'm meeting with people. You have to understand that they probably see you as an expert and are probably intimidated by your vast knowledge. So sometimes, you know, instead of you feeling shy, well, what are they going to think about me? Realize how they see you. They do see you as an architect, as, you know, someone who knows a lot more about your subject matter than they do, at least for most of them, that's going to be very much the case. So good point, Pamela. So I know we have a couple of questions here that...
So I just want to add something really quickly to that, that's conversation about introversion, because it's something that I've definitely dealt with in my own personal life. When I was a kid, I was so scared of asking adults for favors that I didn't take a potty break when I was in sixth grade, and I ended up soiling myself, and literally in front of the entire classroom. That's serious, because I was literally afraid to ask my teacher and let her know that I needed to use the restroom. So, been there, done that. But Pamela says I did that in third grade. Yeah, I did in sixth grade. It was middle school. It was middle school. I think it was fourth grade. And that was at, ask anyone who knows me when I was a kid, they'll probably remember that one. But just going back to the,
what's that? What's that? That's about 13, 14.
Yeah, it's about that. Yep. The good age. Just that age when you really care what people think about you.
Hey, that's the key point, everybody, by the way. For all those who hate the idea of selling, and hopefully I've talked to you that it's not about selling, it's about educating people first and bring them in and help them. But I know for a fact, it has been researched, right? So when people are self-conscious about, you know, going out and selling and calling people, and this is not what we're doing, but the reason they are like that is because they're always asking themselves, what does the other person think of me, right? And that's what you're preoccupied with. Your number one focus is what are they thinking of me, right? And then what you do in your head is you say, oh, they'll be thinking, oh, I hope they don't think this about me, and I hope they don't think that, and maybe they'll think this and this and this and this, and they'll just see me as a salesperson or something like that, right? Okay, so notice it's all about you. It's all about you. Right? Now, the people who are really good at this, and you might call them extroverts, but they just call themselves normal, right? The people who are really good at this, or who are extroverts, or who are very sociable people, the people who really don't mind calling, let's say go back to cold calling, they don't mind calling is because they're actually not focused on selling, they're actually focused on how, you know I've got something which is of value to people. I'm just calling out to find out if there's a fit and if who out there would benefit from what I've got. And they're focused on helping other people. So if you're paralyzed with fear, thinking, what are they thinking of me? What are they thinking of me? What are they thinking of me? The solution is stop being so self-focused, right? They're probably not thinking anything. You're doing all the thinking. Okay, so if you go out, rather than thinking about yourself and stop being so self-focused and self-absorbed, think about how you can help other people, then all of a sudden it takes it away, you know. So your job isn't to go out and sell, it's just, you know, you've got certain skills and abilities, and it's your mission to go out and help people achieve things they want to achieve. And so when you're calling, you know, put the focus on how can I give, how can I provide value, how can I help other people. And if you focus on them, how you can help them, what happens is it takes away a lot of the fear and the worry, because you're not so self-conscious. You're actually in a giving state of mind as opposed to a taking state of mind. So,
love it, Richard. Yeah, that's probably the number one thing that helped me kind of get out of my shell, you know, is whenever I go into a social situation, just thinking about what do the other people in this room need, what do they want, and when I'm talking to them, you know, trying to think about what do they want out of this conversation, how can I help them. Another thing too, now I'm not naturally an extrovert, I think Richard, you seem to be the most extroverted out of all of us. But
no, I don't think I am actually. I actually don't think I am. I am when I'm doing presentations and things like that, because I've got used to it. But in social situations, I'm not overly necessary. I can sometimes, but I'm not actually as much as people would think I am.
That's interesting. There's a great story about this guy I knew who was the life of the party, right? He was, the one, right? The guy who always has the funny jokes. See, everyone's laughing. Everyone loves to be around this person because they're so funny. Well, one day someone walked into his office while he was He had a drawer, and he had his index cards, so a bunch of index cards, right? And on those index cards, he had funny stories that he collected over the years. And he would frequently review these whenever he went to any event. And so the point is, and he was really embarrassed, he didn't want anyone to know about this. So the point is that even the people who are the life of the party, they probably have done a lot of work to get that way. And so there's a certain amount of work that you can do also to change the way you interact with people and be funny. So, I mean, that helped me out. Start collecting stories and stuff like that. So there are some good comments here. You know, Luther Weber says there's a good book called The Freedom of Self-Forgetfulness. And Luther says it's all about trust. Once you make a contact, they have to feel like they can trust you. Yep. Good. So, yeah, you know, other people, they may make it look easy, but as Richard just pointed out, you know, even with Richard, Mr., you know, suave marketing coach.
This is interesting. I'd like to just make a note for our internal use, and that is that this topic of how do you get out there when you're feeling, you know, like not so comfortable being in front of people or just that it's not your natural inclination. This could be a really good thing for us to develop a presentation specifically on. Seems to be
definitely
touched off great discussions. And it's also something that we can take to the LinkedIn group, so our private member area. All of the things that you've been sharing here, boy, if they get expanded by our larger community, we could pull a whole lot of great ideas for how to prepare, how to feel more comfortable, how to shift the focus to helping people, you know, all of these things. Now, Michelle Slinger has shared something that's really interesting, and I just want to read it, sort of skim it quickly, because she has had a breakthrough here by approaching things a little differently. So she attended a networking event. She met an environmentalist I ought to have met years ago. She discussed some of the things and suggested to the environmentalist that she would perhaps develop a 10-point guideline for small developers. So basically helping this environmentalist. Now, she also offered this person to collaborate with her on it. She agreed. Yay, Michelle writes. This small publication will be published and handed to my clients through her clients and hopefully into other or her real estate clients in other real estate agent offices and other architects' offices. So by offering to help this environmentalist to communicate her stuff, to help her to formulate, plan it, and even maybe help write it, Michelle is now being seen as an expert because she's part of this whole process. So what a great win there to network. And simply by saying, you know, I have an idea. I think this could be helpful for you. Great stuff.
Yeah, very cool. So collaborate with someone who has a broader reach than you do. Yep. Let's move on to the next question. Should we shift gears here?
Yeah.
Hey,
go ahead, Richard.
You know, so on that, if you're an extrovert or if you're an introvert or something like that, but, you know, for a lot of the people on your Do 30 list, you could be their secret weapon. And if you look at it that way, you could be, you know, the go-to person that they go to when they get stuck. You know, you're their secret weapon that makes them look good in front of their clients. And, of course, if you can make them look good and provide info that helps them out and sees them out in a tight spot or they can refer you on, then they end up looking good. So there's no doubt. I mean, architects are highly skilled, highly educated, highly knowledgeable, and can have a massive – you guys can have a massive impact on – the way people live, not only just the way people live, but actually the amount of wealth people can have with your design. And everybody knows that, except sometimes you forget it. So, you know, having an architect available to have on call, you know, is like a secret weapon. And you just got to remember that for the right person, if you buddy up with a few people. And when we talk about Super 6, don't forget, we're not looking for 30 people that you buddy up with. We're just staying in touch with 30 people who could end up, you know, finding you really, really useful. And you may only end up with 3 or 4 of the 30 who really, you know, maybe only 2. You know, Melissa Fleming has you know, used to have one builder who referred her 80% of her work, one builder. I mean, you may only need one extra builder or someone. So you go to 30 and you may end up with two or three who you end up having a great relationship with, and they think you're awesome, and they use you as their little secret weapon. That's all we're looking for. You don't need to be 30. It's just we go to 30 to find the three. Don't forget how valuable you are to the right person, you know, and how you can transform their business by being available. So anyway, end of rant.
Thanks, Richard. So we're going to shift gears now and go over to Joy's question here. Next step with Facebook promoted posts. So Joy actually works for a steel, light frame steel construction contractor or manufacturer. Recently said, I ran a Facebook promoted ad targeting South African architects on Facebook. And then she gives us some statistics here. And she says, at the end of the post, I have this call to action. For a free quantity surveyor quote, send your plans to, and then her email address. I had no plans submitted to me. Any thoughts on another call to action? And then secondly, there are a few call architects that I would like to contact. What should my next step be with the people who like the post or page? Eric, you want to take this one first?
Sure. I mean, I think that the call to action in this case was a rather dramatic step. I mean, think about an architect who would ask for a quote. Let's say that's really the final step as part of the process of choosing the supplier in this case. So what you want to find is a smaller step, some information. You know, for information on this, now I don't know what that information would be, but maybe it's some tips about how to minimize wastage or, get you know, more value in terms of the framing, or possibly there's some new technologies or new options that maybe will allow their designs to, you know, to work better. So if there's something that you can come up with that is not just about your firm, but about, useful information, that would probably get more inquiries than just send us a request for a proposal, a request for a quote. Now, in terms of your saying there are a few architects I'd like to contact, the ones who liked the poster page, well, certainly they are people who said, oh, I'm glad to see you're out there. I'm glad you're sharing this information. You could simply send them a personal message on Facebook saying, thanks for liking the post. If there's anything I can help you with, let me know. Tell me a little bit about your firm. You know, you could just be conversational. Wouldn't hurt, and it might just, you might find a small number of them actually respond back, well, you know, this is what we do, and you know, we don't have any projects right now, but you've started the conversation. Enoch?
Richard, anything from your side?
No, sounds good.
Okay. Samuel did have the, Samuel, thanks for that. He says, Joy, your market are most likely the general contractors. So I know that's something that we've mentioned before. That's the way it works here in the States, is that I would definitely be, you know, us as architects, we don't have a whole lot of say in even the kind of metal studs that are used in construction. A lot of times the contractors will swap that out on us anyways. So make the call to action smaller and easier to do. Ruman, my man. Going to take your question here. Ruman, are you on the line? Let's see if you are. I'm going to try unmuting your line here. Let's see. Yes. Ruman, are you there?
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we heard you just fine.
Great.
So I brought your question up here on the screen. Why don't you go ahead and just summarize it for us, and we'll take a stab at it.
All right, I'm in week two of the Architects Marketing Academy and found this concept of the incoming call script very helpful as a prompt on exactly the outline of where the conversation needs to go, apart from how much the drawings cost, how much the drawings cost, how much the drawings cost. So that's been a very big eye-opener. And through practicing the script here with my wife, kind of mock scripts and setting up some of the deliverables so that when calls do come in, I have templates and I can go to job site confident that all that will happen after that meeting is plug in the information received and apart from the zoning research or whatnot specific to this incoming SCAR script, initial site study, and the low commitment consultation. So after kind of looking through some of the things that I have developed over the past 2 years trying to chase my own building, my own practice in February, I started to realize I have a lot of these things, but sort of floating around different projects and different things. So I started to make a database for myself, a systems database, and that started to enlighten me to what I do and I don't have, what points are weak, what can use more work, and assimilate these sort of templates, as I call them. So, and they're based on the last six items of that incoming call script, and that's where it's specifically pointed to, items 1 through 6. The first question is there any, or how do you modify this incoming script for builders and brokers? I have had luck with brokers who refer me to clients for specifically flips, but even commercial real estate brokers are always willing and dealing with land, and there's great opportunity in that as well, I found. So that's the first question, and then the follow-up is just a kind of, if anybody would mind to look over the submitted templates and help me feedback on what may work, what may be not enough, what may be too much, and that kind of thing.
Great. I'll start there, but certainly happy to look over your templates. We are planning on creating a lot more example templates for you in the next version of the marketing system. So we want to almost create Richard Petrie Architects or a Enoch Sears Architects with as many of the pieces mocked up at least for people to see. So I'll have a look and see what you've done. You might recognize it when we do the originals. And in terms of how would you adapt it for builders, we'd have to think about that. That's a good question, actually. That is a good question. So what are the, if a builder calls up, what sort of questions would they be asking? What would they be after?
I kind of was able to deduce that down on a call with Jessie yesterday, actually. She was very great on the initial welcoming call. And the hurdle for me seemed to be that, in a sense, I'm a subcontractor of the general. All I'm providing is not steel, not wood, not pipe or sinks. I'm providing a set of plans. And that always bothered me. But I kind of came to the deduction that no matter who the ultimate owner is, this commitment for looking at your site, looking at your project, or their project was my thinking, it's still the builder's project, is that the commitment needs to come from the builder, that no matter what happens with the project moving forward, my time is valuable enough that the money is coming out of his business or his personal bank account to pay for my time, not the owners, which was kind of like a gatekeeper, and as I saw. So one of the thoughts I've had now is educating the builder, and then Jesse offered the two great advice or points where, one, use any horror stories you've come across, sort of like the index cards, in past where people have rushed into design and what that has led to. Builders relate more to that stuff day in and day out because they have to face the change orders themselves. And then the second point is that Jesse shared was no different than owners, how they are not as educated into what we do with the drawings and the permits and whatnot and the planning and the design. Builders are also not as educated as we may think. I've had plenty of times where a plain set of construction documents permitted and all raised questions about, like any set of documents does, what is actually being intended here through the design. Ask the owner, has the design package been showed to the builder? No, it hasn't. I pull it up on my phone at the job site, the design renderings, boom, it answers everything in a one kind of image answer. And so it kind of showed me that the builders themselves for a lot of times are not as educated or not as imaginative as we are. So Jesse made the point that find where you can educate them as well, and what is it that you can offer to help them get through that process.
Right. There's we have to have a word with Jessie because she comes up with answers which are too smart. She ends up making the partners look not as intelligent. So we might have to have some disciplinary action there for being too helpful. Just joking. Yeah, there's a thing called strip naked questions, and you would have seen them in the incoming call script. It was designed for the person you're talking to, usually being the client. But I tell you what, I reckon that's one thing you could consider is developing some strip naked questions for builders when they contact you. So what are strip naked questions? Well, they're questions designed to ask someone where you already know in advance that the person can't answer them, but as soon as they hear them, they realize they really need to know answers to these questions. So I'm sure it would be very easy for you to... Now, what happens is when you go through five or six questions that they can't answer, but they go, gee, that's a good question. I really should know the answer to that. By the time they've done that five or six times, it's a little bit like sharing your horror stories where they start to imagine themselves, my goodness, there's so many holes I've got in my thinking. And because you've asked the question, there's an assumption that you know the answers or at least know how to get access to the answers later on. So one thing, if you were adapting it for builders, might be to consider coming up with five or six really good strip-naked questions to make them feel uncomfortable and realize that they don't have all the answers. And you'll find they end up wanting to hold your hand very quickly.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
All right, Ruben, well, thank you for the question. Any follow-up questions? I know you have some materials here that you sent in. Did you want us to bring these up on screen?
Well,
look at them?
I think it better if we take some time to look at them separately and respond. We do have a bunch of other questions that were typed in that I think would be good to get to. We're at the 5 minute to the hour mark.
Hey, well, thanks, Ruben. You can always follow up with us through email. So thanks a lot.
Great. Thank you. I very much appreciate it.
Great, it's great having you in the program.
Hey, by the way, Mark, Siddle, I'll get back to you soon. We need to connect.
Yep. All right, so questions that were sent in, just we have about 5 minutes left here. There was a quick question here at the very beginning. Is it better to send a monkey's fist automatically via email or via printed letter? From Otto, Surrey. Otto, printed letter. Okay, that's the answer there. Let's see here. Other questions there, Eric? I'm scanning here.
Okay, so I responded to a few of them saying, good question, I'll add it to the queue. First one was from Pam Chikala saying, would it be a good idea to contact people that did not accept my proposal and hired another architect after their project is complete to see how their experience went for them and if they were satisfied or not with their architect? With the intention of them possibly coming to me next time, I always want to follow up with my own clients and have not done that often. So follow up absolutely with your own clients, and why not check in with some of the other ones? Some of them may be saying, well, everything worked great, and others may say, you know what? I have buyer's regret. Didn't work out. Problems, issues. You know, or you never know. You may think that they hired somebody else and the project went ahead, and you get in touch with them months later, and they say, no, actually, we didn't. And maybe you have an opportunity to win the second time around.
Yeah, I have a funny story about that. Well, my dad was from a family of, I think they had eight kids in the family. He was the middle child. And his older siblings had all gone to Stanford, you know, which is kind of a prestigious college here in California. My dad was rejected from Stanford, so he ended up going to Berkeley. No offense to those of you who went to Cal. I know Eric graduated from Cal, which is a great school. But later, my dad found out. He said, oh, yeah, as a matter of fact, my aunts and uncles told him, yeah, we were rejected the first time, too. The difference is that we went back, and we tried again a second time.
So. All right. So this is related.
Try again.
Yeah. There's a related question from Jorge Santiago saying, I don't know how to ask this, but how do I reach and win clients that I've made them preliminary projects and didn't go with the project? How do I motivate the client back and commit them? So again, try again. There is the 9-word email, which we have in our quick wins first steps, which is essentially just saying, are you still just writing to them out of the blue saying, hey, Joe, are you still interested in doing that renovation project or that whatever project? Essentially, you're just asking that innocent question, and some proportion of them will say, we haven't moved forward. We're still considering it. And you then, of course, have at least the possibility of discussing it with them. So motivating them to work with you, that's another question. Richard or Enoch, do you have suggestions?
I'm just typing an answer to Ruman, so I wasn't listening.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think, Eric, you made a good point. It's about, you know, try to be listening. You know, I like what Pamela said about following up. Clients always appreciate that. I know that when I was in Houston, when I was leaving Houston on my way out, I went to some previous clients we'd worked for just to do a debrief with them, walk through the facility. These were clients we actually had done work with, but basically say, you know, hey, how did the design work out? And I was able to pick up a few things, you know, oh, the nurses didn't like this because, you know, the whiteboard's behind the door and stuff like that, you know. So absolutely. Good point.
So moving on to another question, since we're running out of time here, from Eric Mickerton. Any clever thoughts about using the holidays to reach out to clients? In years past, I've done gift baskets to 4 or 5 important clients or contractors. I've occasionally also sent out 100 Christmas cards. Lots of effort. Not sure either have made a difference. Richard?
I don't have, I mean, clever ideas. I don't have anything that that you haven't done. I mean, I've seen gift baskets and everyone gets the cards. It's definitely appreciated, you know. Well, you know, it's funny, what you notice more is when people don't send the gift baskets than when they do. You're like, wait, we got one last year. What did we do wrong?
Yeah, I've got a simple thing you can do. I might just go get one. I'll be back in a minute. It's a visual
Richard's going to go look in his top or bottom drawer there, and he'll be back in his marketing bag of tricks, see what he pulls out.
There are a couple of things that you can do to make it a little bit more stand out, and that is to send whatever gift at a different time. For example, it's already after Thanksgiving here today, but you know, I've heard of people sending Thanksgiving gifts, because who does that as opposed to Christmas gifts? Or Valentine's Day gifts, you know, so in other words, use a different holiday as the reason to reach out. You know, we love our clients. Here's a Valentine's Day gift. So that at least just gets more attention than being one of many holiday cards that they get in December.
All right. So I know Eric and Enoch have seen this before, but I bought some chocolate bars and made from the printer a sleeve. So it's just an A4 piece of paper, which, you wrap up and put around the chocolate bar. You can see this chocolate bar didn't reach the intended recipient, because I've now just got it did have a chocolate bar in it. And
you had to test it, right?
Paul Burns didn't get his chocolate bar. But it's got the name on it. You know what this cost me? To have this sort of mock chocolate bar wrapper, which you can put over the chocolate bar and send out to them, cost me a dollar per sleeve, and it's got the person's name on it, got my name on it, it's got the phone number, it's got some funny things on it. So plus a dollar plus the chocolate bar. Now, if you get something like that, some sort of chocolate bar or something like that, wrapped in a personalized logo with their name on it, I was speaking to a client the other day, and he said, did you get this chocolate specially made? And that's what they think. They don't know. No, I just got the wrapper made, right? Just the wrapper. But I didn't get the chocolate bar, because they think it's come from the factory or something. It's all been wrapped up because it looks real. So I just, sent it down to the printer. So anything, any food or something like that that has their name, you know, if you can put a logo on a bottle or, you know, a bottle of wine, but you get a special logo made with their name on it or something like that, what tends to happen is they don't throw it out. They tend to show it to people. You know, it's something to if anything's got their name on it, they're going to show it to other people. So you've just got to buy the food or the chocolate or the wine and just get a logo or a wrapper made up. And you can do that at Fiverr.com. You know, there's a website called Fiverr, and it's where all these graphic designers and all sorts of other experts, I'll just type in the chat window, go, and they provide services for $5. So I just got my printer to mock this up. I just wrote it down. He mocked it up and then printed out sort of 30 wrappers, and 29 of them got sent out. But if you go to Fiverr, you can get anything made up.
There you go. There's Fiverr. Well, that was definitely worth waiting for. Richard, thank you for showing that. Great idea. I think that'd be really cool if some people do that. So I put it up there on screen, Fiverr.
Right.
Thank you, everyone, for your questions. Really appreciate it. You know what, Eric here, Mikitan, I'm trying to slide in with the last-minute question here. He says, part of my Dirty 30 is realtors who deal with Oceanside, a community of Sea Ranch. I don't know anyone yet. What's the best way to make first contact, newsletter out of the blue? I would say we covered that in the first part of this Q&A call. Eric, I don't know if you missed that or not, but we really talked about a couple different strategies for making that cold contact, the top most being, you know, find out what you can do for them, offer to interview them. Okay, Eric says you missed the first 30 minutes. Go watch that. We kind of riffed on that for about 15 minutes. You'll find that useful. We'll get this recording up ASAP.
All right.
All righty, everyone. Thank you once again for joining us today. Richard, we'll be seeing you next office hours call.
Yep. And see, goodbye to all the introverts. Get out there and stop thinking about yourself.
See you later, Eric.
All right. Take care, everyone.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for your great participation. Over and out.